Coming to you from Orlando, Florida.
Orlando, Florida.
And streaming around the world.
Around the world.
You're now tuned in to the Sales Samurai Podcast, the only B2B sales podcast providing unfiltered, unapologetic views and tactics directly from the sales trenches. Here's your host, Sam Capra.
Welcome to episode 3 of the Sales Samurai. Thanks for listening. Before we begin, do us a favor, take a moment to subscribe and download. On today's show, we're going to be discussing tactical approach to your ABM strategy. And I have a very special guest to help us tackle that topic. Eric Kostolnik is the co-founder and CEO of Postal.io. It's an experience marketing platform that helps companies drive brand loyalty, increase conversions, boost overall employee happiness, and improve customer health scores. Prior to Postal.io, Eric founded TexRecruit, one of the fastest growing HR technology companies in the world, leading it to its acquisition in 2018 by iCIMS Incorporated. And he also served as the head of sales for Reich from 2014 to 2016, helping it reach number 116 in 2015 Deloitte Fastest 500. Eric was named as Upstart 50 Top Inventor by the Silicon Valley Business Journal in 2017 and currently lives in California with his wife and 3 kids. Eric, welcome to the show, man. I'm super excited to have you. How are you?
Great to be here, Sam. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
I'm loving the background, by the way.
We're back. I never left the office. I have 3 kids at home. So my wife is like, no, it's going to be your executive office now. So I've actually been in office since we got quarantined, but we're starting to have everybody come back here. And, you know, ultimately some of the desks are starting to get set up. But yeah, man, building a business during COVID. It's fun times.
You never signed up for that one. That's an unusual task at hand.
Yeah, but it's all good, man. We were born in the darkness.
Awesome, brother. Hey, man, so I know we're going to be tackling ABM today, and I know that's a big kind of behemoth subject line, especially in sales and marketing and all that kind of fun stuff. But before we do, because it does closely tie to ABM, what your guys' solution does is so intertwined in ABM. Can you give our listeners just a little bit of context around Postal.io, kind of what you guys do?
Yeah, I'd love to. So Postal.io is, and we're just calling it Postal now. So Postal is a sales and marketing engagement platform that deals in the offline. So the last 20 years have been spent, all the investment, technology, infrastructure has been set on really optimizing the digital. And we're now at a point to where we're receiving 10,000 messages per day from brands, right? So we're just constantly interacting with these brands, B2C brands, B2B brands. What makes sense? Well, it makes sense to actually start driving more engagement in the offline. We saw a tremendous amount of offline engagement in the B2C side of things. We said, why isn't B2B doing this? Well, they were. It was just completely decentralized, right? So we've all been spending $120 billion on sending all this stuff over the last, you know, 20, 30, 50 years. But there needed to be system, there needed to be technology, there needed to be automation and tracking in order to do that. And that's really what we're doing here at Postal. And super excited to talk to you about this today. And obviously, you know, where we're going in the future and what I'm seeing out there.
That's awesome, man. Hey, so it does lend me to the question. Obviously, you know, we talked about a little bit earlier, you've done quite a few different ventures. I'm curious what made you go in this, like, what interested you that much about what you're doing now? Because obviously the ABM component of things, what just got you super stoked to go down this path?
So you and I worked at CareerBuilder together. And by the way, unbelievable experience back in the 2000 working CareerBuilder. But what did they have us do, man? They're like, you got to meet with the C-level every single month. And we're like, I'm managing HP. Like, how am I going to go? Right. Sure. So what worked was that leadership said, you need to write handwritten notes. You need to send personalized things. You need to be taking people out for dinners. So it's not like this strategy has not existed. It's just the strategy in order to scale this strategy has not existed. And so this has been something that I've really been thinking about for a while. Ultimately, you know, the last 4 ventures that I was a part of, you know, we had great success with those. But when I started seeing the path of sales and marketing engagement and technology, again, that digital focus is still where everybody is at. And I really thought that this tactile experience and bringing and humanizing the sales and marketing approach was key. But the reason why people didn't do it, because logistically, it's very difficult. I mean, to build something that operates on the online and then on the offline, it's very difficult. And so we approached it in a different way by having, you know, vendors and a marketplace. We took the DoorDash model and the Amazon model and say, great, let's not touch those atoms, but let's connect all these businesses to the best vendors out there that can produce these things for them. And then let's create a centralized platform that does all the automation and helps it work in your models, in your workflows. And that's really where, man, like, you know, Manny from Outreach and I are really close, and he helped me ideate this business, and we were drinking wine in my backyard, and like, he's like, you really should go this. Cause I was like, I want to do AI sales. He's like, dude, he's like, you should go back and take a look at this thing that we were talking about. And obviously a little push from Manny always helps. But yeah, ultimately, I love the positioning of the market. I love what the product's doing for our customers. And we spend $13,000 a month right now on our own product. And we're scaling, man, fast. 120%, you know, quarter over quarter growth consistently three quarters. So you know, we're there. We're drinking the Kool-Aid. But I think inherently what you've seen, what I saw back as individual contributors, we're just making it dead easy to create connection with customers.
That's awesome, man. And I know I want to get into that because I know you guys drink your own Kool-Aid, and I know you guys live and breathe this, not just in trying to sell it. We're a customer of you guys, so I'm a firm believer in Postal. I always ask this question, especially with founders, you know, leaders of organizations. What did you not expect when you started this? Like, what's the thing that kind of came out left field? Like, hey, that's something I didn't even plan on, didn't think of. Kind of was a curveball. I mean, just curious, has anything like that bubbled up, or was it kind of some ripples, not waves?
So the pandemic, minor thing with starting a business.
Challenging, Eric.
I mean, I will tell you, we were about to launch. I built this new office in San Luis Obispo where I wanted to live and grow a business. And we did all this stuff. And, you know, we built an amazing product, raised our Series A pre-product, you know, pre-revenue from Mayfield, and was just like, everything was going awesome. We had our beta customers and everybody was happy. And then, you know, obviously the end of the world happened for a second. And it happened literally on the week that we were supposed to release our press release, March 16th. Okay. So we peeled back and we said, okay, let's take this time. Hey, it's fine. Everybody take care of themselves. We got capital. We're okay. Let's take this time to continue building, continue learning. And let's just push it out, right? So let's keep on pushing out. Let's keep on building and learning. So we officially launched in May, but really we were still in that building and listening mode until we got until about September. And then September, things started turning on and people also realized that their marketing closet was locked up. And they're like, how am I going to do this? And I can't meet with people. And so we got this weird tailwind from COVID, which is bizarre, but it helped us. And I would say that there are all these challenges in businesses that you're never going to see. And they're always, it's all, and one of my best mentors, this guy, Seth Shaw, who's now CRO over at Airtable, but I worked with at Reich. He's always like, listen, man, this is a roller coaster. It's neither as good as it gets or as bad as it gets. It's always just is. So just learn and accept it and be happy and that you have this amazing model and these amazing people that work for you and these customers and just try to learn. And that's really what we tried to do during that process. And I think that's why we've been able to be successful.
That's awesome, man. And I kind of want to transition a bit. I know you brought up our days at Career Builder like eons ago, but you know, I think that's important. And what I've learned with organizations, it's a different mindset. You know, founders coming from a sales background versus, you know, maybe more of a technical background.
Yeah.
A different philosophy. That's a different approach to running an organization. So tell listeners a little bit about your background. I know, kind of, when did you get started? How long were you kind of grinding it out on the B2B business sales side of things?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was selling cars and power tools before I got to Career Builder. So it wasn't like I started my career in like technology and had this like illustrious career in like as an IC in tech. No, I was slanging power tools. And so that being said, you know, I was in the Bay Area selling these power tools for a company called Hilti, which, by the way, amazing brand, amazing company. I got to learn a lot about mechanical and industrial plumbing and HVAC. I mean, ask me, I know about load bearing walls and all this stuff, you know, all this stuff that's back there. So I think the opportunity was when I got to Career Builder and had that chance as an IC. Yeah, it was during the recession. I literally joined Career Builder in 2008. You remember how hard it was. So it's like those selling job postings during a recession, I will say that's probably the hardest thing you can do. Like, you're like, hey, I got all these job postings for you. It's a recession, I know, but like, it's fine. It'll work. No one's hiring during a recession. So it literally was like the most difficult job. And I was like, I should go back to Sun Power Tools. But my first big deal was with Sun Microsystems. And it was like the first 6 months that I was with CB. And, you know, it was this international deal and it was this huge amount. And like, I got rookie of the quarter and all this stuff. I was like, oh, I can do this. Right. And like, for me, you know, I am self-motivated, but I'm also motivated by recognition. And then like, and just give me a little bit of positive interaction and like feedback, I'm going to go through a wall. And so I just made it my job to be high activity, high octane all the time, get into leadership as fast as I could because I knew I wanted my path to go into leadership. You know, Kyle Braun and Gilpin took a chance on me. Malik back in the day took a chance on me in leadership in that group. I love those guys. You know, some of them are customers now as well, right? So I believe in that network and that effect. And then, you know, Carolyn Betts, who now runs Betts Recruiting, was on my team at CareerBuilder. And when I started saying, hey, I want to go back to the Bay Area because I was in Chicago at that time, I was like, Carolyn, you just started this business. You're killing it right now. You're access to all these startups. Like, what do you got? And boom, that led me into my first VP job of sales at Identified, which later became Workday's first exit, right? So, or it was Workday's first acquisition. We exited to them. And then it just took off, right? Then it was like Reich, you know, I joined Reich early on and was able to build that sales model out and grow up to 200 reps from 4. And then I started Text Recruit and, you know, started working with a good friend of mine. Starting business, and go back to your original question, starting businesses and being a part of business as a sales leader and having that mindset, there's a couple things it does. Number one, you got to make sure you have an amazing technical co-founder, which I do in Jed. So you can't pretend like, you know, everything that goes on over here. Get yourself an amazing co-founder that has technical expertise. But it allowed me to let...
Is that called swimming your lane?
Swimming your lane. Getting your lane. Yeah. Do not pretend to be anything you're not. Do not... So where I was really good was like understanding clients' needs. You know, the pain analysis, Sandler, understanding like, hey, where are all these challenges within these businesses? And then I was really good at kind of understanding, oh, how do you build technology around that, Jed? Like, and then Jed and I working together on Text Recruit, point solution, texting and recruiting, boom, done. What is Postal? Same thing. Opportunity, I understand from customers where they're seeing this, and then executing on building the product, and then I go out there and push it to go to market. So I do believe that there's a shift in leadership right now. And I think Benioff was probably the first on this train, is that he really was that first big sales focused leader. You know, you could say Ellison was as well, but he was a software developer. So I think Benioff really was the guy that made it okay to hire and bring on a sales focused and invest in a sales focused CEO.
Without a doubt. And that was definitely a shift because there was a time that if you were a salesperson, that being a founder of like a startup, that just didn't happen. You had to have that technical chops to really kind of give you that credibility in the space. So
correct.
100% agree with you. Hey, so let's shift a bit because this is near and dear to my heart. Obviously, I know it's near and dear to yours, is ABM, right? And I kind of want to kick things off a bit because it is an elephant in the room. Like ABM means so many different things. When you bring up ABM in a room full of salespeople and marketing, you're probably not going to get the same answer from any two different people. Like it's this. Right. It's salespeople going after target accounts. No, it's marketing running air cover with, you know, collateral and webinars. You hear a lot of different things. So first and foremost, because I know you said you guys do this, you live and breathe it. How do you view, define ABM internally? And then from there, I'll layer that on externally when you're talking to clients as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I look at this as an assigned account strategy. And that's what it was called before it was called ABM, right? It's your assigned accounts. Okay, so what do you do with assigned accounts? You assign them to sales reps. And guess what? Marketing is also assigned to those accounts. Because what are you doing? You find your ICP, and then you find your persona, and you create messaging across that. So I believe that ABM is actually this like connector of the two entities of sales and marketing. And because both are so involved in this, and now technology gives you the ability to have this omni-channel approach, the omni-channel approach really is the backbone of ABM. Are you taking the data that you have from marketing and the interactions that these companies are making in these assigned accounts on your marketing content? Are you creating like triggers and things that are happening in a sales org that are happening from these indications of interest in sales and lead score? Able to tell the story and build the infrastructure in order to see that through and measure that properly. And so companies like, you know, like HubSpot and then, you know, Outreach and SalesLoft and Marketo, obviously, all of our partners, you guys are great. These guys have figured it out to connect together. And now that enables you, and I talk a lot about automation and technology, but technology has really allowed it to scale ABM. And now with Postal interjecting these points of offline engagement into this cycle of omnichannel, it's increasing the overall ROI on it, right? 20% increase for companies that use offline in this omnichannel approach. So we really think about it, and I think it's bringing sales and marketing teams together. Like, there's been this, like, you know, corporate bro and those guys are always like, oh, marketing and sales. I don't think it's that way anymore. I really don't see that. So, you know, we've even gone as far to put SDRs under our marketing org. And so that before, like as a sales-led leader, that's like never would I do that. That's our pipeline for our AEs. But when we started looking at it, we're like, no. That's like our ABM strategy. Like they're assigned to the accounts that the AEs are, and marketing is, it's an inbound engine. And marketing, since we have a great demand gen leader in Lauren, you know, she's able to then manage this team of SDRs that actually can produce and create more of that ABM strategy. So plus at the top of the funnel, you always have to have content being the focus of it. So yeah, that's really the way I'm thinking about it for this business.
So to kind of boil that down, which is a ton of good information, is, you know, you're right, ABM, people think that's a new term. It's such a new thing. Like ABM, the acronym started back in 2004, I think. I mean, it's not a new way of doing business by any stretch of the imagination. But I think what you hit on there is the ability to scale it. To our, going back to Cribble, you know, writing handwritten note, I can't do that across 75, 80 accounts and do it efficiently. And then on top of it, personalize it and understand he likes cigars. Let me send him this. He likes this. Let me do that. That ability has been amplified with technology.
Totally. And even in that sequence, so if you think about the sequence that Outreach sets up and your ability to go out and target these sequences based on your different personas that you have in these ICPs, you know, that is a process. And then your nurturing strategy of what nurture tracks are you putting people into based on their personas. I think the key doesn't work. Generalization doesn't work anymore. It did, by the way, when like no one was using automation. You're like, sweet, I can automate 100,000 emails to go across and like have a VoIP where I'm just cranking out calls. That automation got us to like 2010. But since then, everybody's got that playbook now. So how do you create this personalization track that actually takes out what you know about these personas and then puts them in the right track to ultimately have them have a better experience? And how do you make the product, and this is, product always ties into this, right? Is that how is the product aligned to the way that you're selling? So companies can come in and take a trial and see success and pilot. The days of like not offering a trial to your product, done. You have to have people come in. They want to have a buying experience and they want to know what they're getting into. So I think that it's all connected. So you do have to have your marketing, sales, and product all aligned to ensure that this personalization and automation does work at scale.
Without a doubt. In your opinion, is ABM applicable to all business-to-business organizations? Like, is there a scenario where ABM may not make sense to an organization? It's just not applicable to their business model. Or is there some aspects of ABM that it's going to be pretty hard for ABM not to be applicable to?
So, man, that's a really good question. When you first started saying that, my immediate thought was like, well, product-led growth companies, a lot of times they don't have ABM really truly set because they're just so focused on top of the funnel volume and having the product lead the growth of the organization. And so ABM gets a little bit lost. A great example is Asana, actually. So Asana never paid their sales reps quota, or never had a quota on, never paid them commission. Okay, so back in the day when we were selling against them at Reich, and we're like, how can you have a product? How can you have a sales team without a commission structure or a variable compensation? And it was apparent to us that actually the product was set up differently. And so because they were kind of one of those first product-led growth organizations that people came in and saw value, and the price point was pretty cheap to come in and start using it, their salespeople were just like order takers and onboarders. And you need those because you need to create human connection, which still needs to exist, especially in companies that are, you know, and spending a little bit more with you. But, you know, I would have to say that, like, for B2B product-led growth companies that have mass volume and low average order sizes, probably doesn't work. You have to have at least, you know, a $6,000 to $10,000 minimum AOV. Deal cycle has to be predictable as well, and you have to understand your ICP and your personas. Because you're going to stick those SDRs, BDRs, your reps on accounts that you've targeted that you know you have a better chance with. But that doesn't really exist in product-led growth companies.
That makes sense. So really, as your AOV, as those deal sizes grow, as the complexity of a deal grows, that tends much more to the ABM model, if you will, because you got to get much more tactical and strategic, I guess, at the same time, and how you go about getting that new business into the door.
Yeah, and the product, the sales cycle might be complex. You might need sales engineers involved and stuff, but if the product is not able to support a trial and then purchase model, which is really that lower end, then you're going to need a strategy like this for sure.
Without a doubt. Hey, so how do you guys go about it? Like, because you said, listen, we're doing $13,000 a month ourselves. Like, how do you guys weave in? And specifically, I want to talk about that because I do think that offline, that gifting as a solution, as a viable tactic within the strategy is really imperative. And I drink the Kool-Aid as well. I think it's an unbelievable solution. So talk to us a little bit about some ideas, how you guys weave that into your day-to-day ABM strategy over postal.
Yeah, of course. So the way that we're approaching it is there's an online marketing automation system, which is HubSpot that we use. And then there's an offline automation platform, marketing automation platform, which is Postal. And then we have our outreach, right? So we have these three components. And then those are all systems of action. You take action in each one of these. So Postal on the offline, HubSpot on the online, and outreach on the sales engagement side. So we create a connection. All three work with each other. So this is not a single channel approach. This is a omni-channel approach through our marketing efforts and through our sales efforts. So when I say we're spending $13,000 and sending X amount of things across, it really is just our offline strategy that gets interjected into this omni-channel approach. So, you know, a good example just to boil it down is that we start off a lot of our outbound in so named accounts non-active, meaning that there's no lead score to them. Mm-hmm. So we've got our non-accounts, non-active accounts, prospects into our SDRs. They're sending off handwritten notes to start. Then they're following it up with an email. Then it goes through a cycle of phone calls, LinkedIn, all that stuff. And then we're interjecting, depending on the size of the customer, different experiences through our platform. Because ultimately, we're selling our platform. Yeah. So they should be seeing, whoa, cool, I can actually, if it's a big enough opportunity, you know, they'll see the swag experience with Postal. If it's an enterprise opportunity, they're going to get some bottles of scotch from Eric, right? So that is kind of how it all works. And with experiences and events that we have as well through Postal, we also are able to do top of the funnel. So, and I hate making this an infomercial, I don't want to do that, but essentially these events, experiences, we've got hundreds of these events in our system. So you go in and you just like do these events, and these events become this massive top of the funnel virtual event pipeline. And they've kind of replaced webinars for us. Okay. So we've got, you know, hundreds of people attending these events on a biweekly basis. And then those go into our model. But overall, I mean, we do have some complexity to how we set it up. And I don't want to like overwhelm your listeners either. You can do this very easily by just creating a very, even if you don't have outreach or Marketo or HubSpot or whatever, you can very easily say, I'm going to send an email, I'm going to make a phone call, and then I'm going to send them something. Or in that email, I'm going to have, here's some coffee, you know, a link, have some coffee on me, let me know if you're free, right? And just interject some of those surprise and delight parts of this outbound. So we work with our customers to determine like, hey, what is the best solution for you and how to use this offline engagement? Some have, you know, larger appetites than others. But I think at the end of the day, what we're just trying to do is we're trying to increase conversions. That's it. You know, increase the conversion of your overall funnel. And those that are adopting it and have done well with it, you know, they're seeing that.
You know, you bring up a number of good points there. And I know in my own journey here at FlexEngage, leading a sales team, there's one thing that happens, and it's a slippery slope. And I know as sales leaders listening to this podcast, we start talking about ABM, they think a lot of technology. To our point, it allows you to scale. And to your point, we have Outreach that does this. We have HubSpot that does that. And we just inject Postal here. And already that might be thinking, and that's blowing my mind, that's 3, 4, 5 different technologies. But the key piece you brought into there is it's not agnostic. You don't need to be working in each individual. Something needs to be the crux, the backbone of it, that guides everything to that. Am I saying that right? Is that fair of what I'm saying?
And that is Salesforce. So that's really, astute. Salesforce is the middle of that triangle. Right. So then you have those points, and that's a system of record.
Right.
So you have to have your core infrastructure set, and you have to have your CRM. Really, your data integrity for your CSM is number one. If you're going to invest any money at all and do anything, it is how strong is the integrity of the data that I have in the system? Because guess what? You know, crap in, crap out. So, and we all know that, but it's like, but unless marketing and sales really believe that, and that executive leadership is focused on data integrity, and then it doesn't work. This falls apart, and you'll end up spending, you know, $50,000 on the best tech stack, but the records are wrong, right? The information in your central place in your hub is wrong. And so, you know, I think when this is all said and done, and you know, we're old men and we're talking about like what the next thing is, what'll happen is that this will all collapse into one system eventually, right? And Salesforce is trying to do it. Yeah. They're trying to do it, but it's really hard because, you know, these point solutions of offline, online, and sales engagement, those still are growing so big. They're getting so big independently that it becomes hard to consolidate all those into a single platform. So I think that there's something there that's going to happen in the future, and whether it's mass consolidation during a recession or, you know, something that's going to drive the consolidation of this, it's going to happen, I think, right. Unless the VCs want to keep on pouring hundreds of millions of dollars to these point solutions, which I'm okay with because, you know, we're one of them, but yeah.
And I know we talked about, hey, it's all about driving conversions, but along the way to conversion, like, what are some KPIs? Like, what are the metrics that are important to say, is my ABM strategy working? Is it not working? Where do I need to tweak? Where do I need to refine? What have you seen as best practices along the way to say, hey, keep going down the path. You're getting there versus, hey, let's hit the nuclear button here.
100%. Okay. So this is why sales and marketing super important to be working together, because guess what marketing does really well? They measure. Measure. They are data nerds. They should be. If you don't have a data nerd in your marketing department, you need one, because those people will tell you ABM is working. And why is that? Well, you see, first off, you know, before it was like, I'm going to pick up a phone. There's no website. And I'm going to just pitch. And then you get a callback if they were interested. Now you don't get callbacks. Everyone knows, right? I think Google stopped cold calling, by the way. There's like some big, huge company. It was like, no, we're not cold calling anymore. I'm like, that's the worst idea ever. But the companies that actually see, instead of the guy picking up the phone and calling you back, the companies that they're seeing and tracking the behavior of those individuals online and the content that they're self-educating on, that is the indicator that your ABM strategy is working. You got to lead score correctly. And you got to make sure that lead score follows to your reps. And your reps know, hey, these are hot. Right. These are hot. Now you got to hit them hard. Like, LinkedIn, phone call. And there's got to be those triggers that happen, not automated. It's like, no, reps got to go through. That's your job. What is hot and what is not? I'm going to go hit all the hot ones up that marketing is telling that is hot. So I think that really is the crux of the reporting on the ABM.
Gotcha. And just, and you know, as you're going through this, because I found we go through this probably annually from a tech stack evaluation. What are we using? What are we not using?
Right.
What actually talks to one another? And one of my main criteria is it's got to integrate with Outreach, going back to Manny and your conversation. That's where our team lives and breathes every day. Now, we have a central repository of data, which is Salesforce, without a doubt. But we don't live in there. We live in Outreach, and that pushes everything back to Salesforce, our day-to-day. So if all these siloed single-point solutions can't interact with our day-to-day solution, that's usually a knockout for us. Like, hey, if you can't 100%. Talk outreach, and I think that's where sales leaders miss the boat a bit on ABM, is they get overloaded because they have so many different systems, and then they're expecting the rep to navigate it on their own, and then they don't, and then it breaks down, right? And then all of a sudden it doesn't work, and the metrics aren't hitting. So thoughts on that? Is that a fair assessment? Is that something you see quite a bit as well?
You're right. No, the assessment is right. Yeah, 100%. I mean, those that are not like, okay, so I think they got to that position because either number one, they're a really good IC, or number two, they just like worked their way up and they're like, they're even a better manager than they were in IC. And so but most of them, most sales professionals are not extremely technical when it comes to the actual test stack itself. So We get happy ears when we see someone, oh my God, this is going to solve all my problems.
Right.
Oh my God. As a sales leader, right? You're like, oh my God, this is going to do everything. And I'm going to get this thing. And next thing you know, you're like, your sales ops is like, why did you buy this? Like, this doesn't even do any of the stuff that we need for this thing. And you're like, oh my God. So I think, you know, you got to have strong sales ops in order to help you guide your path to what you want to accomplish. And for startups, that's really hard because sales ops is usually a really expensive role and it's like, and they have to be good. And that is that, you know, you have to find someone that actually you can trust to do the research and understand how does this all fit together. And in our sales ops person, Asia, you know, she's fairly junior in her career, but man, she gets it. You know, her dad's a physicist, like a nuclear physicist, right? She's got brain, like super smart. Like, and it's like, why? We saw amazing potential in her and she's been managing our rep stint.
Right.
You know, everything we do is kind of connected to each other and she can take really what the sales leader's opportunity is in your ABM strategy and then provide insights into technology that can solve. Yeah.
Hey, so let me ask you this, Eric, because I mean, you know, I hear this quite a bit. Actually, I just heard it earlier today. You know, you got two buckets, and I know there's more than this, but there's two buckets in this scenario. Mm-hmm. You've got the organizations that have invested in ABM. They got the terminus, they got the postal, they got the outreach. They understand the value. A lot of that's a well-oiled machine, or they're figuring it out with help from individuals like you and vendors and solution partners. But then you have the other side of that, where they're a little slower from an innovation. They don't know if they quite see the value of ABM, and they got their reps out here. They're just like, well, what about us? Like, how do we approach this if we're doing this on our own? Like from a tactical standpoint, you brought it up earlier. Hey, it's no different if you don't have the budget, don't want to do something, send an email. Maybe you go to Amazon. Maybe you write a handwritten card and you send it out yourself manually. How does someone that doesn't have these tools right now, how should they look at strategically, tactically, whatever, kind of implementing some baseline things that's a good starting point as a sales professional to start going down this path?
Yeah. So first off, let's not talk about technology. Let's just talk about the flow. So I don't think necessarily that the flow has changed that much. You're still, and over the last call it like 7 years, right? So you've got like, you got your email, you got your telephone, you got your LinkedIn, and then you got, whether it's like some note cards that you have or that you have, or maybe you like find some e-gifting stuff that you can figure out that's low barrier to entry. And really what you should do is you should just figure out, okay, let's test these different models of how to do this. And even if you don't have an outreach to spec it out, you can do it manually. So you can figure out like, okay, this week I am going to try this cadence of sending an email, making a phone call, sending a note, you know, making another email, doing a LinkedIn connection. And like, you just kind of follow your path and just make sure that you are understanding like how that path is performing. So they call them cohorts, and it's a fancy word for groups, but you have to understand your cohort of, okay, great. If I did this week, I'm going to measure this in 30 days. And see, of the outreach that I did, if you're just doing it manually on a spreadsheet, here's what my conversion rate is. And so then once you're done with the manual aspect, then you go, great, how can I actually build technology to help me manage this more effectively? And then you start looking at, okay, outreach and postal in order to do that. And then, you know, the HubSpot and the marketing automation stuff, That's a whole other beast that to ABM that you do need a system for. I mean, it's really hard to like test landing pages and like do all this. So yeah. You do need a system for that component. But if you're a sales rep, you know, it is a pretty straightforward process to understand, is an omni-channel ABM strategy work?
Right. That makes sense. And from the standpoint of what do you guys see internally? And I know your system does a lot of metrics and analytics behind the scenes to help navigate some of those decisions you make. What's the difference in a sequence that maybe doesn't have an offline component? Do you guys gauge that a sequence that may have an offline component, like a gifting versus one that does? Can you kind of, and I know that's a very broad, you know, analysis, but what are you typically seeing from that, Eric?
I'll give you one of our customers. So Lessonly, and I'm sure you've seen this too, but Lessonly is a good client of ours. And so 40% of the leads that are sent with a postal incentive, so whether it be a direct incentive from one of the reps or there's some offering built into their marketing automation, if postal touches it, 40% convert into pipeline. Okay, so 40% of those leads convert into pipeline. That is an extremely crazy number. But if you think about it, it makes complete sense. Because what are you doing? You're differentiating yourself from your competitors. I hate the gifting. I'm trying to get away from gifting because it's not gifting. It's incentives. All you're doing is giving people incentives to like do something. Right. Gifting, I cringe. I'm like, oh God, it's gifting. It's horrible. So I'm trying to say incentive marketing because it really is. What we're trying to do is incentivize you to take an action. And by the way, I get incentivized to take actions all the time. Right?
But Eric, my only pushback on that, not the gifting.
Okay. Sure. Yeah.
But I think you can admit, I think you can see this as well. I know I've done this. I've been solicited from G2 or one of those deals. Hey, $20 gift card, just take this survey or $20 and have a book a meeting with us. And I may do it. Is there a downside? If it's not done right, are you just throwing money? Like, is there a point of diminishing returns where it's like, that's not the right setup. That's not the right goal, if that makes sense. Because I know I've got about $50 worth of gift cards in the last 2 weeks, and I don't know if I've taken action on any of it.
No, by the way, do you take action on every single Google ad that you see?
Without doubt.
Right? Like, are you just tossing money down the drain for paid advertising? 100%. Right. Why do you do that? Well, because there's a conversion rate in that channel.
Right.
I'm not saying every single lead that you're going to send a gift card offering is going to accept a meeting from you. But I will tell you that people are incentivized by something that they get, they can touch or spend or whatever else. They are incentivized by that. So, and by the way, man, like this is like not a new thing, right? This is like, we've been taking people out to dinner forever. I played, how much golf did we play at Career Builder, man?
I was a lot better at golf way back then. That's for sure.
I'm like, I want that back. I want to go play golf all the time. I love that. So I think that like the companies that have like a no gifting policy, I totally respect that decision. And I think that, you know, some companies just, that's part of their deal. But like when you have, we're talking to, I will say, parts of government side of the world right now, military potentially, to where it's like, they're looking at this as well, right? Wow. Sending a piece of something, right? Whether it's something that says Army on it, right? Or something, anything. It doesn't need to be monetary. It can be something that's branded, right? Yeah. So I think you really need to define, and that's why incentives are important, because incentives do cover branded promotional things or a flower basket or, you know, whatever you want to send, right? Or a gift card. So you have to know your audience with that. So, you know, sending a $50 gift card to somebody that has no gifting policy, not a good idea. But maybe sending them something that's branded and just saying, hey, or a charity, like sending something, hey, I want to donate this on your behalf. It works.
But that goes back to your original point. Your data's got to be good. Like you've got to know who you're sending to, your ICP, and does it make sense to be sending that to that group? I mean, that's really what you're getting to. That's just a bad data that you did not account for, you did not adjust for, you did not adapt to, or whatever the case might be.
That's correct. Yeah. You know, not everything is going to work and it's not going to be 100%. But, you know, what you really do need to understand is that there is a conversion rate built into every single channel that you operate through. We talk about omni-channel reporting, but, and generally, by the way, the number that we found and with our customers is that by adding in this omni-channel ABM strategy, an offline touch point, it increases conversion by 20%. That is what we're seeing now. So 20% lift in that overall challenge or that overall omnichannel approach. That piece is important to understand because if you break down each one of those channels and independently see what works better than others, incentive marketing is always going to perform better than email marketing. Because guess what? You're doing this less because there's a cost associated to it. And you're doing this more, but the conversion rates are lower. Right. So we're at this impasse right now to where digital is overloaded and creating diminishing returns. So you have to move into the offline in order to have equal or better results than you had. So I just think that and again, we're not changing the way people are doing business. Everybody's always been doing this before, but now it's easier to scale this. So I think that the channel-based metrics, understanding what your channel conversion rates are, what your omni-channel conversion rates are, conversion rates in your ABM strategy, these are the types of accounts, size of accounts, type of personas you're going after. You got to really understand all that stuff. And it sounds like a lot, man. God, that's a lot. But if you're going to do it and you're going to scale fast, you need to do this. These four organizations I've been a part of, we've gone fast. Now, you also can sit back and be like, dude, I don't want to do that. That's way too much work, right? And that's not my expertise. You go back to grinding phones and hitting, Grant Cardone style. Dude, just hit the phones. Go. And that might work for you. But an omnichannel approach, I think, is going to be a little bit more effective as we move forward.
When I'm listening and we're having this conversation, it really just comes down to how do you separate yourself from the noise? It's all around, to your point, people are getting barraged with email. They're getting, even now, people are getting calls on the cell phones because your people are not in the office. And now you're getting barraged on the cell phone. You're getting hit up on LinkedIn a million ways to Sunday now. It's how do you start to distinguish yourself from the pack, right? And that's why I think this is a valuable solution. And we've used it, and I used it to our conversation around Career Builder in a very micro way back then, sending a thank you card. If I knew a guy liked cigars, I'd go buy him at the ABC wine shop and I'd freaking mail it to him. And those relationships, that was not just a conversion. Those always seem to be my best relationships as well, Eric. The ones that have carried through as I've changed and I've gone back to them. They're either now a customer or they're at least a relationship that I can lean on. So I think there's a lot more than just the conversion aspect of it that you can lean on, right? It's they converted, but they might not convert today. But that relationship that you're building, there's value to that.
Yeah. What you're saying, that conversion a lot, and it's robotic. It's robotic. It is, because I live in this world of automation and trying to scale things.
Sure.
The human approach, man, that's 100% right. The human approach, just being a good person, figuring out what someone likes or figuring out how you can create a better connection with them, making a donation to their favorite charity, send something that's nice, or even just, making a phone call and just saying, hey, how are you going? Not trying to sell you anything. How's it going? I think the best relationships I've had in business, and it all comes back around, man. You're a customer of ours now, right? It all comes back around. People want to buy from people. People want to buy from people. They don't want to buy from machines, right? So I think that, and I don't subscribe to the whole with product-led growth. I don't subscribe to sales is dead. There's a lot of companies that are we don't need salespeople. We got product-led growth. No. That's not how it works. People want to buy from people. And until you build a robot that can act exactly like an SDR, which, by the way, I was going to try to build before I started posting.
Was that the first iteration of Post?
That was the first idea that I had after Text Recruit. And I was talking to a couple of buddies that are in the industry. And they're like, you should do that. That's really great. And then Manny came over. It's a horrible idea. Gong's doing it. Everybody's doing it. I'm like, okay. But you need to be a human. And especially now, it's harder to connect with people than ever because, attention spans are fruit flies. So how do you build that? But you're dead right, man. You gotta be a human.
God damn. Final thoughts for the listeners, just kind of takeaways. If you heard nothing else, a couple of things that you recommend doing just as feedback for those that are grinding it out there or sales leaders that are trying to figure this out on the fly or build and scale as well.
So first off, you cannot be an expert in everything. You cannot be an expert in everything. So do yourself a favor, take meetings with technology companies because they are experts. You don't need to buy. And by the way, you can even tell them, listen, I'm not going to buy right now. I just need to understand. We are experts in what we do. You are experts in what you guys do, right? So if you are considering starting something new and starting a new strategy on something as a leader, or even an IC, you need to really take these meetings and understand what is available. Yes, we're going to try to sell to you, but you're going to learn a lot along the way. So I think that's one. I think the second thing is that you have to be different. You have got to be different. We talked a little bit about it, but like there, in order to win in B2B, it is going to be as competitive as B2C, eyeballs. We interact with 10,000 brands a day. All this stuff is branded, everything, right? We interact with. So how is your brand, this B2B brand, going to stick out? And I think that's the only way to that is being different. Yeah, man. Those are kind of the two thoughts that I had.
We appreciate it. And we know you're extremely busy. We appreciate you taking the time. How can people out there connect with you online? How they learn a little bit more about Postal.io, that's the web address. Yeah. Help us understand, how do we get in contact with you guys?
Yeah, so feel free to hit me up on LinkedIn. I'm fairly active on that. We're sharing things about the company and things that I'm seeing as well in this industry, you know, student of the game. So happy to connect with you. And yeah, for Postal.io, free trial, we can walk you through. We do humanize the trial process, so you will be assigned to somebody. But yeah, feel free to reach out. And yeah, obviously appreciate the time and reconnecting with you, man.
Awesome, brother. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Sales Samurai Podcast with your host, Sam Capra. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast and visit salessamurai.io and join the conversation, access show notes, and discover bonus content.